प्रपन्नपारिजाताय धूत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी आर अबाउट टू बिगिन द लास्ट चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद्गीता और 700 वर्सेस दैट आर देयर इन द गीता। द 78 वर्सेस आर प्रेजेंट इन द लास्ट चैप्टर। सो द 18th चैप्टर is the longest chapter, second longest to the second chapter with 72 verses, and then there are other chapters. The 11th chapter has 55 verses, like that. So this is by far the longest, and this is also a chapter that gives a overview of the whole Bhagavad Gita, and then it concludes in bhakti. So this chapter is called as Moksha Sannyasa Yoga. So that kind of renunciation which will lead to liberation. And Prabhupada translates it as the perfection of renunciation. So let us look at the chapter overview before we move forward into the contents of the chapter. So in this first 12 verses, talk about Karma Yoga. Essentially they talk about how by doing Karma Yoga, one can stay free from bondage. Then this point is explained philosophically further in the second section, where it's described what keeps a karma yogi free from bondage is the jnana of the karma yogi. So that is talked about in verses 13 to 17, which describe the five factors of action, and they describe how when one understands these five factors of action properly and then acts, one will stay free from bondage. Then in verses 18 to 40, the jnana of a karma yogi, second parts are talked about. Second part is, what is the jnana that the karma yogi needs to have? This is about the modes of material nature. So, in this case, there's analysis of further of what are the elements of action and how those elements of action, like karma, karta, jnana, then dhruti, determination, knowledge, doer, action, and ultimately happiness, how all these things affect a person when that person is doing activities. And then accordingly, how, depending on which mode these are done in, there is an appropriate result that comes about. Then 41 to 48 talks about karma yoga offered to Krishna. So after describing an overview of the previous chapters with some deepened understanding of Karma Yoga, now this chapter moves on to an explanation of how Karma Yoga can be offered to Krishna. Then after that, 49 to 55 talks about how Jnana Yoga with Bhakti can be offered to Krishna, how one can perform Jnana Yoga and how it ultimately leads to Bhakti. And then the last section, 56 to 78, talks about the glory of Bhakti Yoga. So let's look at these chapters by these verses, starting from the first verse. Arjuna Vasa Uvacha Sanyasasya Mahabaho Tattvam Icchami Veditum Tyagasya Charshikesha Pruthakesha Nishudana. So Sanyasasya Mahabaho, Krishna is being asked by Arjuna, Tattvam Icchami Veditum. So I want to understand the truth of renunciation. Sannyasa, the truth of renunciation. And then he uses another word, Tyagasya cha Rishikesha. Also, I want to understand Tyaga, renunciation, and Prithak. Prithak means the difference. So I want to understand renunciation, and I want to understand the Tyaga. Prabhupada translates this as the purpose of renunciation and the renounced order of life. So the renounced order of life is sannyasa, and renunciation itself is Tyaga. So Prithakesh Nishudana. So in this verse, three names of the Lord are used over here, which all indicate the Lord's capacity to destroy the demon of doubt. So the Lord is Mahabaho, he has very powerful arms, Then he is Keshi Nishudana. He is the killer of Keshi and Rishikesha. So he is the lord of the senses. And senses are very formidable, and the senses need to be controlled. So like that. Prithak Keshi Nishudana. Now, when we talk about this, what exactly is the question and how is it related with what has been talked about earlier? In this chapter, when we talk about Krishna and Arjuna's discussion, the 17th chapter ended with a mention that Krishna recommends sacrifice according to scripture, and if one is not doing sacrifice according to scripture, then gradually by having Om Tat Sat, by chanting of the names of the Lord, one can spiritualize the sacrifices. So there is no immediate connection between Krishna's concluding verse of the 17th chapter and the 18th verse, the 18th chapter's first verse. Arjuna's question is generic in the sense that it's not related specifically to what has happened earlier, but Arjuna wants a conceptual clarification of what should be his ultimate course of action. So Arjuna has definitely got some understanding now by this time. In fact, as we know, when he speaks at the end of the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita in 10.12 and 13, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, so like that, when he glorifies the supreme position of the Supreme Lord, the Acharyas explain at that time Arjuna's illusion is gone. Arjuna has understood the essential message of the Gita, and he himself is expressing that message. But then the subsequent questions are, as the Bhagavatam says, Lokahitam Nrupa, for the benefit of other people. Or the Bhagavata uses the word Lokasangraha, for the maintenance of the world. How? By providing insights of how a person can live in a proper way as per scriptural guidance. That is what is talked about in the subsequent chapters based on the way Arjuna asks questions. So Arjuna is taking broad concepts, broad terms that are known in the Vedic context but that are not always available in terms of a holistic understanding. So here Krishna is giving Arjuna a holistic understanding, and in that connection is asking what is Tyaga and what is Sannyasa. So now after describing this, that means Arjuna's essential question is, should I fight or should I not fight? So should I just renounce in spirit or should I renounce in a deed also? So that is the question. Now we'll see how Krishna responds to this. So 18.2, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kamyanam Karmanam Nyasam Sanyasam Kavayo Viduhu Sarva Karma Falatyagam Prahustyagam Vichakshanaha. So Kamyanam Karmanam Nyasam. So Kamyanam Karmanam means for Kamya Karma. Nyasam means renunciation. Sanyasam Kavayo Viduhu. So the wise declare that what is sannyas? Sannyas means to give up kamya karma. And sarva karma falatyagam, and giving up all kinds of work, that is prahus tyagam vichakshanaha. Tyagam vichakshanaha, that is actually tyag. So what is Krishna talking about essentially in this chapter? Let's try to understand this over here. Tyaga versus sannyasa. So there are two different types of karma. Karma here refers to fruitive activity, or rather fruitive activity is according to scripture direction. Not all fruitive activity is sinful, especially if the fruitive activity is according to scriptural direction, that is good. So in that there is nitya karma and there is kamya karma. So nitya karma is standard prescribed duties like say sandhya vandan. So the brahmana is supposed to do Gayatri every day. And that Sandhya Vandan is a Nitya Karma in the sense that It has to be done every day. And it is considered to be a lifelong duty that a Brahmana performs. On the other hand, there is Kamya Karma. Kamya Karma is that which is that kind of religious activity, that karma, which is done to fulfill a particular kama. Like we have the Dharma Artha Kama progression. So Dharma can also be performed to get a particular kama, particular desire fulfilled. So here Putra Kama Ishti again is talked about. Ishti is the desire, Putra Kama Ishti. That means when a king performs a yajna, so that he will get a putra, he will get a son. It is called Putra Kameshi, Kameshti. So now, so what Krishna is telling over here is, if we go back to the verse, na, here we will see, Kamyanam Karmanam Nyasam Sanyasam Kavayovidam. So among these two kinds of karma, Kamya Karma and Nitya Karma, sannyasis are meant to give up the, in the sannyasa ashram, one gives up the Kamya Karma. So for example, a sannyasi doesn't actually continue with the actions of the householders. The householder means obviously a sannyasi will not be doing a putra kameshti. But there are other yagyas also which a sannyasi does not do, because sannyasi gives up all material desires in the sense of doing specifically to doing anything to fulfill those desires. Sannyasi wants to give up material desires also, but at least the fulfillment of those desires and striving for that fulfillment is something which one has to give up in sannyasa ashram. And sarva karma phala tyagam rahus tyagam vichakshanaha. What this means is, what is tyaga? Sarva karma phala tyagam. So that means Krishna defines tyaga more as not just renunciation of action, but renunciation of attachment in action. So when one is not attached, then one is not actually doing, one is actually a tyagi. Krishna is using the word over here. So essentially Krishna says the difference is, one is to give up a particular kind of karma, the other is to do karma, but then to do it without attachment. So sannyasis give up kamya karma, those who are not sannyasis, but those who have the spirit of tyaga, they may do kamya karma also, but they do not do it for the sake of material desires. They do it for the sake of spiritual achievement, for the sake of purification, for the sake of realization, for the sake ultimately of liberation. Let's look at the next verse. Tyajyam doshavaditye karma prahur manishinaha yagnidan tapah karma matyajyam iti chapare. So now Krishna is giving opinions of different people over here. AK and Apare. AK means one kind of people. Apare means another kind of people. So, Tyajyam Doshavadityeke. That Doshavad, faulty. Some people say that Karma Prahur Manishinaha. So that giving up karma is recommended, because karma is doshavat. Prahur means they say. Now interestingly, Krishna uses the word manishinaha. Although he is quoting some people, he is not saying that they are foolish people who say that he should renounce the work. He is saying they are also manishinaha. That means mana isha. Isha is controller, mana is mind. So they are not ordinary people. They are thoughtful people. They are thinkers. Now Krishna is not necessarily saying that they are thinkers, thinking is necessarily correct. But he is acknowledging that they are thinkers. And as we will see Krishna doesn't support their thinking. Krishna doesn't conclude that thinking is correct. Doshavadit. Krishna says that it is not dosha. That it is doshavat. Even if it is doshavat, we will see Krishna will say that one should not give up karma. That is Krishna's conclusion. So, what is significant is that Krishna recognizes that opinions that are different from what he is going to give, they can also be held by people who are manishinaha. This is a significant point here, that generally we try to think that my opinion is right, and especially people who are autocratic, totalitarian. If a company boss is totalitarian, what will happen is my way or the highway. My way or I fire you. and people tend to have that sort of attitude even in religious circles. If my God is the only true God, if you don't believe, then you are going to go to hell. Not only are you going to go to hell, we will help you get there faster also. So that is an intolerant attitude people can have. So that sort of recognizing that there can be an opinion different from ours, and that opinion, even if it is wrong, it deserves to be respected. That spirit is demonstrated here by Krishna when he uses the word Manishina to refer to those people who is going to contradict actually, as we will see in the later verses. So here the Bhagavad Gita does take a stand. You know, we will see Krishna will tell at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharman Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. So the Bhagavad Gita takes quite an assertive stand. You know, this is what you should do. But taking an assertive stand doesn't mean that one has to throttle all opposing voices, or even throttle means choke all the voices. Or one can be respectful, and Krishna shows that respectfulness, Manishina. Now being respectful doesn't again mean that we agree with something. There are those people also, they are having a different perspective looking at things. We appreciate this perspective, and those who are holding this perspective can also be intelligent. But just because they are intelligent, that does not mean that their intelligence is conclusive or is it correct. It is correct. It may be deficient in some ways, and that deficiency has to be acknowledged if we want to seriously pursue towards the ultimate truth, the conclusive truth. But just because somebody has an opinion that is different from the conclusive scriptural opinion does not mean that the person has to be necessarily foolish. That person can be a serious seeker who has not yet come to the level of understanding the glory of scriptural wisdom. So we have to respect serious thinking wherever we find it. So Krishna is also earlier, we see the same spirit in the 5th chapter when he is talking about comparing Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. He says both are good. Nishreyasa karavabhav, that both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga are nishreyasa, both are conducive for liberation. But tayostu karma sanyasat karma yoga vishishyate. Then he says, but among the two, this is better. Which is better? Karma yoga is better than karma sanyas. So similarly, Krishna says, some people say, oh, some wise people, some manishina say that, oh, all work should be given up. And others say, yagya dana tapah karma natyajyam iti chapare. Others, apare means some other people, they say that, natyajyam, that actually yagya dana tapah, these are prescribed duties. And they are important for one to do, and one should never give them up. So now Krishna will describe, after this, describing these two competing schools of opinion, he will describe what one should do next. So he will go into, he said, I'll give the conclusion. So let us see how he, after quoting the two different opinions, or how he continues this thread of thought. Nishchayam shunume tatra tyage bharata sattama त्यागो ही पुरुष व्याग्र त्रिविधा संप्रकीर्तितः. सो निश्चयम् शृणु मे तत्र, निश्चयम् शृणु, हियर फ्रॉम मी डेफिनेटली, यार हियर द कंक्लूसिव अंडरस्टैंडिंग ऑफ निश्चयम् मीन्स सर्टेनिटी. सो तत्र इन दिस सब्जेक्ट वेयर डिफरेंट पीपल हैव डिफरेंट ओपिनियंस, व्हाट इज द कंक्लूजन? त्यागे भरत सत्तमा. सो त्याग, व्हाट इज एक्चुअली त्याग? भरत सत्तम, भरत सत्तम the best among the Bharata dynasty. Tyago hi purusha vyagra. Purusha vyagra is a very beautiful describer. I'll come to that. Trivida samprakirtita. That tyaga is of three types. Trivida samprakirtita. So we'll see again and again that Krishna, while doing any analysis of anything, after he's introduced the concept of three modes in the 14th chapter, or rather explained it, that has been referred to repeatedly, but he has introduced and explained it in the 14th chapter. Then he is coming back to that reference point again. He has done that in 17th chapter, and he is doing that again in the 18th chapter. So here he will do it for Tyaga, and later he will do it for some other elements also. So Trividha Samprakirtitaha, they are of three types, and those three types will be goodness, passion, ignorance. But here, the important point which relevant to us is Purusha Vyagra. This is the only place where Arjuna is referred to by this particular name. Now, Vyagra means tiger, tiger. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna, you are a tiger among men. A tiger is a strong, ferocious animal. And in the Vedic context, for a king or a kshatriya to be compared to be a tiger is a matter of great honor. Because that indicates that the kshatriya is praiseworthy. As powerful as a tiger, as ferocious as a tiger, as fearless as a tiger. So, Purusha Vyagra. So, here we see another point of respectfulness is that even when somebody is a student, Krishna is giving instruction to Arjuna, Arjuna is a student, but just because a student, somebody is in a subordinate position doesn't mean that we have to make that person feel small or bad. Where the person is qualified and has abilities, they can be recognized and appreciated. And that's why Krishna repeatedly referred to Arjuna throughout the Bhagavad Gita by names which are epithets, which are appreciating and glorifying the qualities of Arjuna also. So Krishna is glorifying Arjuna, Arjuna is also glorifying Krishna. So Purusha Vyagra, or tiger among men, just as a tiger cannot be overcome by small animals or small ninjas that are there in the jungle. Similarly, a person who is a tiger among men will not be overcome by small animalistic or animal-like misconceptions. So Krishna says that you Purusha Vyagra, you're tiger among men, you can conquer over all misconceptions and understand the conclusive truth that I'm going to tell you now. So Nishchayam Shrunume Tatra. So how does Krishna begin? Continue this. Let's look in the next verse now. So Yagyadana tapa karma natajyam karyameva tad yagyodanam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Yagyadana tapa karma natajyam karyam eva tad natajyam karyam, that this is not work which is to be given up. Tyajya means that which is can be given up, which should be given up. Na tyajyam, this is not work that should be given up. Yagyodanam tapaschaiva, that actually these three activities, yagyodanam tapa, pavanani manishinam. So it's interesting that the same word manishina is used, that those manishina who think that yagyodanam tapa is doshavat, actually which was referred to two verses earlier in 18.3, here he is telling that it can purify even them. Even the great souls can be purified. So nobody goes beyond the power of the rituals. You know, in bhakti also we have rituals. So yagyadana tapa at one level can refer to specific rituals that are performed in the Vedic context. So one may go beyond them in the sense that one may not require karmakanda rituals, but then one practices bhakti also. Bhakti is not just an emotion of the heart. It is emotion of a heart, but also has expression as an art. And that is done through various ways. There are rituals. You know, we fold our hands, we offer obeisances, we do aarti. These are all rituals. So even advanced devotees do this because it can always keep purifying them. Nobody can say that, none of us as seekers can say that, I am so pure now, I don't need this. No, pavanani manishinam. Everyone can become purified by this. Pavanani manishinam. And yagyodanam tapaschaiva. So these three are the parts of the kam. Generally, this is how kamya karma is performed. So a person may do these kind of specific activities, like the Ekadashi Vrata is there. As devotees, we do Ekadashi Vrata for the sake of purification, for the sake of going closer to Krishna. We do Ekadashi so that put aside our other activities on which we do for the body. We minimize those activities, like say eating and if possible sleeping and other bodily activities, so that we can have more time for bhakti, more time for focusing on Krishna. But there are others also who do Ekadashi Vrata for the sake of material benefits. And in fact, there are books like Ekadashi Mahatmya, which are accepted but not necessarily recommended by our Vaishnava Acharyas. They contain stories as Mahatmya of a particular Ekadashi. What will happen if one does this on this Ekadashi? What will happen if one does this on this Ekadashi? They are helpful, but in the sense that they may inspire some people to do Ekadashi Vrata seriously. But generally, that is not the primary recommendation for a devotee. So it is said that if one fasts on this Ekadashi, one will get this benefit. One fasts on this Ekadashi, one will get this benefit. So devotees don't go too much into those benefits. He focus primarily on the supreme benefit of bhakva, of prema pumarto mahan, of love for Krishna. And for the sake of prema, we are ready to do whatever is required. And Ekadashi is also done that way. And it can purify. So yajna, dana, tapa. These pavanani manishinam. So what is Krishna going to say? Krishna has asked, what, I'll give my definite opinion. And he says that, he begins by saying that actually, nataj, one should not give it activity. Because the proper scripturally ordained activity can purify even the great souls. Pavanani manishinam. And Prabhupada used the example. So, vivaha yajna. The marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. It's a profound statement. What does it mean? That actually the mind is often excited about the pleasures of the world. And if one has not experienced the pleasures of the world, then one starts, one has a hyperactive mind which fantasizes about many things. Oh, maybe this pleasure will be like this, this pleasure will be like this, this pleasure will be like this. And that hyper fantasization keeps one restless constantly. But when one gets some gratification within a dharmic perspective, within a dharmic framework, that means through marriage, then one starts, one gets the experience, there is satisfaction of that hankering, and there is also along with that the realization that, you know, there is nothing as great as the mind had made it out to be. Nothing as great as the mind has made it out to be. And now if people are unfortunate, then they start thinking, especially it happens in today's society, where people get to compare themselves with the best in the world. For example, if we see on the television, on the movies, they'll show the most good-looking men and the most good-looking women. And then people compare their spouses with the models that they see in these media. And then they think, oh my son, maybe, you know, because of this person, my problem is coming. So then I'm not getting satisfaction. But maybe if I had a relationship with that person, I would get satisfaction. And then therefore, what happens is the mind doesn't become regulated. Mind starts thinking, okay, maybe with that person I'll be better. I'll be better. But if a person understands that, takes this vivaha yajna, this marriage seriously, then rather than blaming oneself or blaming someone else, one starts recognizing, okay, I had some infatuation, I had some fantasies, and now from fantasy I'm coming to reality. So things could have been much worse also, things could have been better, but this is what I have. Let me accept this and move forward. But this doesn't necessarily mean that one has to accept abusive situations, not at all. But important point is that one shouldn't think that just because I didn't get the pleasure here, let me try somewhere else and I'll get the pleasure over there. Or I'll get the pleasure over there. In general, dharma, the dharmic vivaha yajna helps to regulate the mind. Okay, there's nothing so great that I have to become excited about it. No need to get excited, let me just continue on in my spiritual duties, and over a period of time I'll get purified and I'll experience higher spiritual happiness. So the purpose of making the mind peaceful is also for spiritual advancement. Or if the mind is too restless, excited about this sense object and that sense object, then the mind cannot experience the calmness that is required to focus on Krishna. Of course, by focusing on Krishna also our mind becomes calm. That means I am agitated right now and I chant Krishna's names, and that will also help me to become calm. But often if the mind is constantly agitated, then that prevents us from focusing ourselves on Krishna. But once the excitement is exposed to be not so exciting, then one can become peaceful and one can practice spiritual life. So that's what Prabhupada said, Vivaha Yajna. And Vivaha Yajna, this is one example Prabhupada, it should not be given up. The Prabhupada was sannyasi and he himself would conduct the marriage ceremonies of his disciples. He's written in his book that sannyasis are not meant to do this, but who will do it? There was no one at that time. Sannyasis, he was the only spiritual master during his time, and he was the leader. All his disciples depended on him for everything, and he did the best that he could for them. That means he himself arranged marriages for them. So now sannyasi is not meant to, of course, engage in association of the opposite sex, but that doesn't mean that is forbidden for everyone. There is another ashram, Grihastha ashram, and if the disciples can make the best advancement possible for those particular disciples in the Grihastha ashram, then that's what is recommended for them. So now, after describing this, let's see what happens in the next verse. Etanyapitu karmani sangam tyaktva phalani cha kartavyani time partha nischitam matam uttamam etani apitu karmani. So sir, apitu, certainly, of all these activities, certainly sangam tyaktva phalani cha, that means one gives up one's attachment and one does these activities. Kartavyani iti me partha. Kartavyani iti means when understand this is my kartavya, this is what I should be doing. Nishchitam matamuttamam. This is my definite mata, Krishna says. Krishna has given quite a conclusive understanding. You understand? This is what I want you to do. Nishchitam matamuttamam. The definite opinion is that do what is required as understanding it to be one's duty. And Krishna had earlier used the word Nishchayam shunume tatra. And Krishna is now saying here, Nishchitam matamuttamam. This is my conclusive understanding. At work with detachment, don't get entangled. And Prabhupada writes, everything that leads to Krishna consciousness should be encouraged. Do the activities without attachment. And now Krishna will give analysis of Tyaga in terms of the three modes. So 18.7, Nyatastu sannyasah karmano nopapadyate mohatasya parityagas tamasah parikirtitaham. So Nyatasya tu sannyasah. Now Krishna has earlier told that one should not give up natyajyam karya, it should not be given up, but if somebody gives it up, Nyatasya tu sannyasah. Nyata means nitya karma, but is prescribed, one gives that up. Karmano na upadyate, that activity which is not deserved to be given up, that which is not worthy of being given up, mohatasya parityagas. Mohatasya parityagas means that such tyaga is out of illusion, and tamasa parikirtitaha, that is declared to be in the mode of ignorance. Tamasa parikirtitaha, it is known to be. Now what does it mean, this kind of renunciation? So generally you would think of renunciation as something good. Renunciation, renounced order, are glorified quite a bit in the Vedic scriptures, and we see how even great kings respect the saintly people. But then the Bhagavad Gita is quite penetrating, going beyond superficial analysis, wherein it describes that one should recognize that even renunciation can be in the three modes. And if renunciation is in the mode of ignorance, then that doesn't lead to any elevation. So renunciation is ultimately meant to help to facilitate devotion, to facilitate liberation. So Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that even the hippies, they had done sarvadharman parityaj, but that did not make them followers of the Bhagavad Gita. They had to do the second part, that is mamekam sharanam vraja. then they became followers of the Bhagavad Gita. So to do Sarva Dharman Parityajya alone, you know, they had given up their duty to the nation, they had given up to their family, to their even their religion, to their education, to their culture also to some extent, whatever culture was there at that time. So this was terrible. You know, that is tamasic, and most of the hippies were living in terrible conditions. The way where Srila Prabhupada went, in first in the Lower East Side and then in New York and then the Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, both places, they had become places of great degradation. So they had given up their duties. There might have been some sparks of spiritual hankering initially in these people, but over a period of time, when they got into drugs, they went so deep and deep and deep into drugs that they lost the opportunity to rise further. And all that happened was there was very little spirituality, and there was just mostly drugs only. And along with that, there was of course free sex, which involved, as we have discussed, the only regulatory principle was to break all the regulatory principles. So it became quite degraded. So just giving up one's activity is not renunciation. Or that's not the renunciation that is the glorified renunciation in the Vedic literature. It is tamasic renunciation. So Krishna condemns this. Mohatasya parityaga. This is out of illusion. It is not about. So this mohatas word is important because mohat was used earlier also to characterize the mode of ignorance. Prakasham cha pratyam cha mohameva cha pandava. So when Krishna uses one word to characterize each of the modes, he uses prakasha, illumination for goodness, pravritti, action for passion, and moha, illusion or illusion for ignorance. So Krishna is using the same word mohat over here. And it in, now generally speaking, most people think, people who are in a pious culture, they think that if a person has become renounced, then what is the reason for the renunciation? Oh, this person has got some great wisdom. Maybe this person has become enlightened. Maybe this person has got some extraordinary knowledge, and that, because of that illumination within, that person has become renounced. But Krishna is underscoring that renunciation is not always because of illumination. It can be because of illusion also. So that means illusion means one has to do some duties, but one rejects those duties out of irresponsibility. And that is tamasic. And Krishna doesn't at all recommend that. Let's look at the next. Now, after talking about renunciation in the mode of ignorance, now he'll talk about renunciation in the mode of passion. Dukkham ityeva yat karma kaya klesha bhayatyajet sakrutva rajasam tyagam naiva tyaga phalam labhen. So dukkham ityeva yat karma, that somebody thinks, oh, this work is very troublesome. Kaya klesha bhayatyajet. And one thinks, oh, this involves too much kaya klesh. Kaya klesh means this involves too much trouble for the body. And because there is so much trouble for the body, so I will not do this activity. And that kind of an attitude is sakrutva rajasam tyagam. This is tyaga in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion. And naiva tyaga phalam labhet. So this will not lead to the fruit of renunciation. The fruit of renunciation refers to, renunciation itself is not the goal. Renunciation should lead to some other goal, that is liberation. So if one is giving up activities because of irresponsibility, in terms of not just illusion but evasion. Evasion means one doesn't want to do hard work. One wants to evade. Okay, I meant to do this, but I will not do this. One wants to be evasive. Evasive means not doing what one is expected to do. Evade responsibility, as we say. So, this is kaya klesha bhayatya. This is very troublesome. Sometimes some people feel that, it sometimes happens that some people, they are having some, they're trying to have some love affair with some boy is trying to have a love affair with some girl, and then that love affair doesn't work and that boy thinks that, okay, now I'll become a monk, now I'll become a brahmachari. See, brahmachari is not just frustration, is not enough for renunciation. Frustration may lead to an initial spark towards renunciation, but that way, that is not going to last. Somebody may think, somebody is working in a very demanding job, 12 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours the job takes, and then the person thinks, you know, why should I work like this? I just go to the temple and chant and dance and sing and I'll be happy. Why do I have to work so hard? So this kind of evasion, if it is there, you know, one wants to, one finds material life too troublesome, and because of the troublesomeness of material life, one decides to take up renunciation. Krishna said this is Rajasam. Now we wonder, why is it Rajasam? Aren't we meant to understand how this world is Dukkhalayam and then turn from this world to the spiritual world, towards this, take up spiritual life? So that's true, definitely. Philosophically, we have to understand this world is a place of suffering, and then one has to turn towards the spiritual world. That is definitely required. But that philosophical understanding of this world as a place of misery comes when one is in the mode of goodness, or when one is cultivating goodness. When one wants sense gratification and when one gets frustrated in sense gratification, both of these, the craving for sense gratification and the frustration in sense gratification, both of these are characteristic of the mode of passion. So the infatuation with sense gratification is itself characteristic of the mode of passion, as Krishna says in the 3rd chapter, 37th verse, that kamesha krodesha rajoguna samudbhavaha. So kama and krodha, how do they come about? Rajoguna samudbhavaha. Wherever there is the mode of passion, that's where they emerge. Rajoguna samudbhavaha. So the point which you are making here is that kama and krodha, they emerge from the mode of passion. So kama is the desire for sense gratification, and krodha is the anger, the frustration when the desires for sense gratification are not fulfilled. So both are in the mode of passion. Then krodha can go down to ignorance also, of course. But the point is that this whole frustration which comes when one finds the pursuit of material enjoyment too troublesome, and because of that one wants to give it up. If one's overall consciousness and lifestyle is in the mode of passion, then that frustration is not going to last. Because what happens is that simply one is thinking that, okay, this particular opportunity for enjoyment didn't work out, but maybe some other opportunity will work out. This did, but someone else will. Or maybe it's not working for me, but for others it is working. So we are not really, when a person is in the mode of passion, the person is not convinced that this world is Dukkhalaya. That person is simply thinking, my world is Dukkhalaya. So my world, oh, there is Dukkha in my world. But only if my world will become something different. That means, okay, I'm living in a small city. If I can go to a big city, oh, I'm living in India. If I can go to America. So then my world is Dukkhalaya, but outside, if I go somewhere else, there it will be Sukhalaya. I'll experience Sukha over there. So this is actually the mode of passion. As we say, the grass is always greener on the other side, that things always look better at other places apart from where we are. So this, when a horse is grazing, the horse is eating some grass, the horse sees a river, and on the other side of the river, there the grass looks so green. So like that, we always think such other situations are always better. But that's not true necessarily. That doesn't mean that never situations can be better. Definitely, certain situations may be preferable, certain situations may not be preferable. But that has to be decided based on calm deliberation, not impulsive illusion. That means, when we talk about realizing this world is Dukkhalayam, that is based on philosophical introspection. that is based on deep understanding of the philosophy and then observation and realization of that scriptural teaching based on our own experiences in the world. So that requires a healthy amount of goodness. Whereas when there's frustration, when there's more of passion, that frustration doesn't last. That Maya is also so cunning that she will never make us hopelessly frustrated. Maya will keep us hopefully frustrated. That means we'll get one suffering, second suffering, third suffering, fourth suffering, and then thinking, oh, this world is full of suffering only, I'll get out of this world. At that time, Maya will give some pleasure. Oh, I can get happiness also over here, I can get pleasure over here. And then I think, oh, and then just when my hopes rise up, I'll get happiness. Then again, suffering, 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 suffering. That's how Maya works. So we can't really get out of these clutches of Maya very easily. So Maya is so expert, she will never make us hopelessly frustrated. So sometimes the question is asked, is there happiness in this world? Or there's no happiness in this world? So actually, there is enough happiness in this world to make us forget that it is a miserable place. So the world remains a miserable place, but if we get a temporary high, oh, that high seems so good, just like a person who is drunk. When the person is drunk, at that time the person may fall in the gutter, and gutter water is going through the mouth, and the person, somebody else comes up, my dear friend, why are you suffering like this? Come on, who is suffering? Get out, I'm enjoying. Now, what is the enjoyment there? The person is such a mortifying, terrible situation. But that's what is the person in illusion thinking. So now if alcohol did not offer that high, that feeling of exhilaration that comes after a person takes alcohol, if the alcohol did not offer that exhilaration, then that person would never take alcohol. But what happens is, when a person takes alcohol, one gets a little exhilaration. And if a person is not really astute, a person is not seriously a thinker, not a deep thinker, then one doesn't realize there may be that high, there may be that kick, there may be that exhilaration, but there is so much trouble before and after. Before that, I have to find out, I have to shell out my hard earned money, I have to waste so much of my time, maybe I have to become disgraced when I go to a bar, and then after that take up something also, then I sometimes, people get hangovers, people vomit, people babble all sorts of crazy things when they're intoxicated, and they get health problems in the long run also, apart from the headache that they get next morning, hangover. So many issues come up. But what happens is, for a person who's addicted, that little spike of happiness that has come, that seems to be worth it. Nothing matters, it's worth it. Whatever it is, it's good enough for me. So I don't care what is the price that I have to pay for it. Well, this is worth it, but it's not worth it. So as long as a person thinks, okay, whatever trouble I'm getting before and after, it's worth the pleasure that I get over there, that person until that time cannot become elevated, cannot become free from the addiction to alcohol. But by serious thinking and by acceptance of that thinking, I should not just think but accept that thinking, this trouble is much, much greater than whatever pleasure is there, and therefore it's not worth it. So once one understands this, so there can be the frustration of a person after taking alcohol and getting a hangover. That frustration is temporary. After that, when the next temptation comes, again the person will drink alcohol. So that frustration during the hangover alone is not enough to make the person sober. Sober means free from the alcoholic addiction. So for that, one requires a lot of determination. Sometimes a person may require counseling, and a person may require even sometimes a retreat, you know, away from one's immediate vicinity, to go to some place, to some de-addiction center for some time. And whatever measures are required, people may have to take that. So of course, if a person takes shelter of Krishna, then the holy name can act very powerfully and purify one of the other desires. But I'm comparing here to this point that just as the frustration of the alcoholic during the hangover is not enough to help the alcoholic kick the habit of errands, kick the habit of alcoholism. That can be a beginning point, but for a sustainable progress towards sobriety means freedom from addiction, one needs a process and one needs determination. One needs to fill one's day with something much more positive. So same way, one can get frustrated in material life with its problems, with its illusions, but that alone is not enough for one to reject material life completely. Everybody gets frustrated sometime or the other, but to learn to pin one's hope on Krishna, to learn to do things which will please Krishna and which will comprise service to Krishna, to be able to do that, one has to turn from this world towards Krishna. And that doesn't happen just by frustration with this world. And there has to be proper philosophical education, and there has to be devotional purification. Then there is a turning of heart from the world to Krishna that happens. And that's why if one just because of trouble decides to renounce the world, that renunciation is in the mode of passion, because one's overall consciousness is in the mode of passion. And that's why as ISKCON as a movement is evolving, especially in India, where there are people who, there are young people, young boys who are interested in becoming brahmacharis. So they also told us earlier in our movement, when especially when it happened in the West, and people wanted to join, and they wanted to join immediately, they were allowed to join. And in India also, in the initial days, that's how it happened. But over a period of time, it's been recognized that if the devotees are joining as brahmacharis, if they're to continue, then it's not that just they become frustrated with material life and get an impulse to join and they join. No, they should prove their commitment by practicing devotional service seriously for several years. And then after they are observed by senior devotees, then they can join. And often it's best recommended that somebody is doing some education. Then it's best that they complete the education, because one's dedication should not just be impulsive. It should be sustained. So if one just gets introduced and thinks, oh, Krishna has just been chanting, dancing, singing. Yes, that is there, but there is a whole complex of the mind to deal with. So one cannot just forget the problems the mind is likely to create and the deep-rooted conditionings. So if one is able to practice it sustainably for a good amount of time, one is also able to do one's duties, and then after that one can join. So in America, generally, even by the time when the hippies were there, the joint family system was not there much. So generally, there the sons would not have any responsibility to the parents. But in India, and in other traditional cultures also, the sons are expected to take care of the parents when the parents grow old. So that responsibility also cannot just be abandoned. So it's good if the sons do some work, get some experience in the world of working also, what it is like in real life in the material world, so that they don't have any illusions of grandeur of how they could have enjoyed material life. And also they earn and they provide for some financial security for their family members, for their parents, and then they join. So the idea is one should be able to continue for a regular amount of time. And especially grihasthas cannot take cannot become irresponsible in the name of becoming transcendental or renounced. If somebody is a grihastha, one has to do one's family duties. And one cannot think that because I'm a grihastha, you know, I'll go for yatras. It's good to go for yatras, but not too many. One cannot shirk one's responsibilities. So one will need the guidance of senior devotees, counselors, of where one is shirking responsibility and where one is becoming over ambitious in material life and neglecting one's spiritual life. So we don't want either extreme, that one neglects spiritual life entirely in the name of material life, and one neglects material life entirely in the name of spiritual life. That balance one has to learn through guidance from seniors as well as by one's own experience. So Over a period of time, we learn that balance individually. But one should not mistake just frustration with material life as the qualification for renunciation. The actual renunciation is not so cheap. One has to qualify for that in terms of positive spiritual attachment to Krishna. Let's look at the next verse. Karyam ityeva yat karma nyatam kriyate arjuna sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva satyaga satviko matah. So karyam ityeva yat karma, when one understands that this is a prescribed duty, niyatam kriyate arjuna, and niyata, it is prescribed for me, it is what I must do. Kriyate, and one does that, Arjuna. Sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva, that one gives up material attachments and does the activity. Satyaga satvikomataha, such tyag is in the mode of goodness. So in this way Krishna has endorsed activity in the mode of goodness, even tyaga also renunciation in the mode of goodness. And what is that renunciation mode of? Means action in renunciation, not renunciation of action, but renunciation in action. That means one does action in a renounced spirit. So in this way, what is Arjuna's answer? Arjuna's question was, please explain sannyasa, please explain tyaga. So actually Krishna doesn't go into a technical hair splitting analysis of both the terms, but he gives understanding of the broad principle. If you look at the 7th verse which you discussed earlier, then in the same verse Krishna uses the word sannyasa as well as tyaga. So here he is using niyatasu sannyasa, and here using the parityagas, there also using the tyaga. So Krishna uses this two words to refer, and by using these two words in the same verse, and if you look at the meaning, Krishna uses the two words interchangeably. That means, he says, if one does sannyasa of the karma, then that is tyaga in tamoguna. So that means sannyasa is, and tyaga Krishna uses equivalently, the way in his answer is. So instead of going into a hair-splitting analysis of terms, Krishna sticks to the broad principles of the three modes of material nature and analyzes Arjuna and answers Arjuna's question. So how Krishna continues this analysis of karma yoga, we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.